I'm opening. We have an eye, part of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
And welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another Anatomy of a Movie. Sorry, Anatomy of a Movie. I got tongue-tied there. This week's dissection is This Is Where I Leave You, directed by Sean Levy and written by John Cropper. I'm Jonathan, if you want to be more formal. I'm John Comerford, joined in the studio by Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
Dimitri Dimampanos.
I call him Johnny.
There you go. And Chloe West.
Hello, hello.
All right, for those of you who are actually watching this and not just listening to it, you might see the Movie Talk Nation signs all around, and that's because we are now part of the Movie Talk Nation Network.
Woo!
Very
Woo!
Happy to be part of that. We'll still have all our shows on the Anatomy of a Movie site as well.
Yes.
But we are very happy to be part of that. We're Movie Talk Nation. We talk movies. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's get right into This Is Where I Leave You. What were our original thoughts?
Overall, I really enjoyed this movie. I mean, I think everyone likes the fun, family, kooky dynamic. And, like, any crazy family that's somewhat similar but somewhat completely different from your own, that's always fun to watch. This reminded me of the film Eulogy back in 2004, which has an amazing cast. You know, Famke Janssen, Hank Azaria, Ray Romano.
It was a Lionsgate movie.
Yeah, there was a great... That's a great dark comedy film about funeral and everyone's coming back together for a week. And this really reminded me of that film. But this had the nice, fun... emotional, real family dynamics to it that I really did enjoy.
D-Man.
I thought this movie was... I think it's a great example of how a good cast, and in this case, a good ensemble cast, finding the right people, elevate what to me was ultimately a highly mediocre, overly melodramatic script. Had it been anybody else, and there were other people selected... I don't think it would have worked as well. I mean, as I went through it, I was entertained. I laughed. I had to roll my eyes at a couple of things, and it seemed at parts that they were just throwing in the kitchen sink as far as throwing in dilemmas and problems and whatnot. But ultimately, I found it charming and sweet. I thought that I really loved Jason Bateman. Tina Fey was fantastic. And I really think that ultimately, you know, it had its sweetness overcame... And its cast overcame whatever pitfalls I thought that the screenplay had.
Cool.
I agree with you totally. I think this cast really elevated the film. I really enjoyed it. I thought that they all worked so well together. It was almost like a dream cast for me to see these specific actors be a family. It was really exciting. And that's really what made me want to see this film. Were these specific actors, why did they choose this film? Anytime I see Tina Fey in something she didn't write, I'm like, there's something about that. There's something about this film that I need to see it, because if Tina Fey didn't write it, you know, there's something about it that's going to make this film special. And I really enjoyed it. And I laughed and I cried. I probably cried at those moments that you thought were a little like cheesy, but it really touched me. And I thought that everybody played everything so well and naturally, nothing was pushed, and even the great family moments. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I really enjoyed it.
That's great. I did too, I have to say. And I think the part you were talking about, Dimitri, about throwing this in and throwing it. I just, at some point I went, of course, why not? Let's throw it all in.
But to me, that's not a positive. Like, it's like, oh, well, why not throw in lesbianism at this point? Like, let's just have it come
up.
I liked it because
at some point in the movie, I go, I don't know if they intended this as a farce, but that's how I kind of took it. I said, of course, yes, let's bring in the lesbians.
Yeah, of course, why not?
I think you needed it almost in this, because so many things were so depressing, especially Jason Bateman's story, that you're like, you almost needed those silly throw-ins to be like, oh, ha ha ha, phew, I can breathe again, like, without just being sad.
Sort of, but like, to me, it's more episodic. Like, if you had this 13 episodes to go through, then you watch it, and then it leads up to that, and you're like, oh, this was like an hour and 40 minutes. It was very brief. And it's not like I thought things were cheesy. I just felt like, what other problem can we like throw in this? Like
everybody, I liked it because I'm just going, okay. First of all, you have the mother, the matriarch, the manipulative. First of all, I didn't know at the beginning how manipulative and controlling she was. Then you realize, oh, of course, all these kids are going to be screwed up. She's right. a psychologist, so you know they overanalyze anything, but glean no kind of insight.
Right.
And of course they're going to be all screwed up. So let's throw as much in there as we can.
Oh, and they
who's
do.
More screwed up than a psychologist kid?
Right. Right. No, you know what I mean? And again, it wasn't. It just became almost too much. Like I see, mm-hmm. you mentioned Eulogy, and Eulogy, I thought it was an okay movie. As such, it's hard to rein a lot in. And to me, when it comes to a family dramedy, and it tried to be a romantic comedy, and it tried to, you know, and I think Sean Levy orchestrated everything, mm-hmm. keeping it tight. But I always go back to Parenthood. Mm-hmm. I mean, the movie mm-hmm. Parenthood yeah. to me really nails it on the head in getting it. It has its melodrama, it mm-hmm. has its comedy. Sometimes they're a tough act to balance. Not that Sean Levy didn't balance it. I just felt in this particular thing, it was almost like cliche. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. we've got to have the bonding over getting high scene. Mm-hmm. Fun scene though.
Yeah,
it's like I didn't mind it,
which was
because,
also in Eulogy.
I didn't mind it mm-hmm. because I liked the cast. I liked watching them, and I ultimately had fun watching it, even though it's a little bit cliche and we've seen it before. I like the rabbi that they kept on calling Boner.
Character was
so funny, and again because I laughed, it didn't make me angry. That I found it to be overly melodramatic and or just it didn't, you know, the mm-hmm. script was mediocre. The cast brought it to life in a way that I think nobody else really could have.
I think what this film did really well for being a melodramatic and comedic film, it was the comedic timing. Mm-hmm. Along, they had that perfect balance of drama and comedy. When something was really sad and the audience were tearing up, they'd throw one little thing to make us laugh during that moment. It was the constant balance of between light and funny and then dark. And it was, again, goes back to the comedic timing. Like, yep, all right, mm-hmm. now we can laugh again. And then get it to dramatic, and then we can laugh again.
I mean, I was thinking, you know, to be a comedic actor, you know, I mean, because we already know certain people can handle comedy really well. But when you're looking at people that we've come to know and love, and in this movie, we have Jason Bateman, we have Tina Fey, and they're able to straddle that line. And you're right, the comedic timing, but yet we buy them in the dramatic moments as well. So when they're sitting on a rooftop, there's a sweet mm-hmm. moment, but yet we could still chuckle at something that Tina Fey or Jason Bateman says. But they don't do it so it's over the top, like, it's not farce, so mm-hmm. to speak. We buy them in their dramatic roles, but because of their comedic timing and their comedic actors, they are able to pull off, I think, something that's very difficult for a person who may not be a comedic actor.
Interesting. You know?
So, and that's what I really liked about this movie. Corey Stahl, I thought, mm-hmm. was really good. I think the other standout was Adam Driver.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Adam He's amazing in Girls.
Yeah.
The HBO Girls.
Yeah, and he just basically took everything he's great at and brought it to this film. Yeah. And yeah, I loved him in it.
Yeah.
I thought Adam was great. And Corey, too.
Yeah.
I was like, I mean, we all know Corey now from House of Cards. Mm-hmm. I think that's.
And The Strain.
That's mm-hmm. sort of like
it was
the
great.
Biggest
Midnight
thing.
Midnight in Paris is Hemingway. That was one of the.
Yeah, and he terrific. Just is like, again, playing someone, mm-hmm. a character that we haven't seen him as. Mm-hmm. And. Which is awesome.
Somebody asked, I have a question about Corey Stahl, because, again, House of Cards, fantastic. Yeah. He's great. And I'm a huge fan of the show, The Strain. He has hair in The Strain. Is he hairless? Like, what?
He's bald.
He is. Yeah. Okay, so that must be a wig or something, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. Okay, because I was just curious.
But that's pretty cool that he can, you know, put a wig on like that, and he just transforms into something.
Totally transforms.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and I buy him, and I started watching The Strain, and I was like, wow, he's such a good actor. Mm-hmm. And he was actually one of the reasons that I wanted to go see this movie. It's like, of course, though,
yeah,
I got to see it because I like this
I think
guy.
That's the reason why most people want to see this movie. They look at the cast.
The cast.
Like, oh, this guy's
and just
this.
Them together. Like,
yeah.
I mean, Tina Fey and Jason Bateman, I could see them in a movie together. Mm-hmm. But adding Adam Driver and Corey Stahl, you're like, wait a sec, and they're all a family?
And we're forgetting one person because this surprised me. Well, Jane Fonda, but another favorite of mine, Timothy Oliphant.
Oh, yeah.
I was like,
sure.
When I saw his, like, because I hadn't seen him in any of the advertising. Mm-hmm. And when I saw his name, I said, oh, Timothy Oliphant's in this too? Mm-hmm. I said, oh, okay. You know, that's great. So yeah. It was a good coming, it was a good put together of cast. Mm-hmm.
So. Did you buy, though, that Corey Stahl's character was older than Jason Bateman's? Because that was the only thing I didn't buy.
When I look at this family,
time.
I go, I don't believe any of them are related. I mean, if you just look at them. I don't. I don't believe it for a second. But I go, what is, and you have to forgive that. You just got to get around. It's like, okay, who did Mom cheat with to produce that?
Right.
You know, but because they don't look like family at all.
I actually could buy, like, Tina Fey, Jason Bateman, Adam Driver.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe I could see Jane Fonda mothering Corey Stahl, but Corey Stahl thrown in there as the older brother.
But Corey looks nothing like Jason.
Nothing like that.
Yeah. I don't mind that because looking at real families and there are siblings that look nothing alike, but they are blood relatives. You know, it's like that's just a real thing. But I loved their dynamics together and how their chemistry together was so on point that physical appearance just was nothing.
When the first time that Tina Fey's character is bugging, what's his name? Jason's character, Jed, okay. So, and she's saying, you have to tell him, and just going relentless. Yeah, that's me and my sister. Just bugging the crap. Would you stop, shut up? You know, that was so brother-sister.
I think the fights in this film made the film what it was. Like, watching the siblings fight were so real and great. Mm-hmm. And from the nagging type fights to the brothers' physical fighting and like how that was actually funny because they didn't know how to fight and just the crazy that this family showed and showed so well and so naturally, I thought is what made this movie so great.
Except when the brothers were coming to fisticuffs, I was saying, really? You don't know how to fight? Again, I mean, if it were me and my brothers, that's it. Fists would have been flying.
And it's funny, the scene that you're talking about too, Sean Levy talks about it. He talks about how he loved that scene because again, it was because of Faye and Bateman.
Sure.
And it was in the script, and they were going off... They were using the script, but then they ended up going off script. He said they used the script, but they found this way of fighting with each other that was so brilliant, and it was so not scripted. Mm-hmm. I just let them go.
Yeah.
and that scene is really funny, and it has a great payoff, and it's a very funny
You can
scene.
Tell it was definitely improv, because they went a lot... probably a few beats too long, to the point where you can tell that they went off script. But I didn't mind it because they're both of them. They're just great comedic actors. And if you watch like 30 Rock and Tina Fey and her writing, just how she is with comedy, you just keep going. And SNL in itself, you know, it's improv.
And it didn't overplay itself. And there was a great rhythm to it as well to that scene. I liked it. It was
much like in my family, if you have a fight, the next minute you're buddies again.
Yeah.
It's like the fight's gone. It's family. So it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
That's about what it was.
Yeah, and it had a lot of those kind of good scenes in it. And again, I think I just enjoyed watching those people work together, that it just made it easy to watch. So I got wrapped up. The other person that we're not talking about is Rose Byrne.
Yes, who was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was great too. And see, I like watching her in these kind of movies, in a bridesmaids kind of. I mean, she too can handle comedy and drama. For me, very easy to watch. I think she's very attractive, and I love her. But she was so good in this movie.
And I loved the scene. I don't know if anyone else noticed this. It might be a girl thing. Where she had lipstick on her teeth the entire scene. No makeup person fixed it. But it was so that character and so cute that she was wearing like bright pink lipstick and it was also all over her teeth. She's still being cute and still – it just worked. And I'm really glad that they didn't edit it out or try and find a scene where –
it'd be really interesting to find out if that was a choice by her saying, no, I want to do this. Or if they just missed it and said, oops.
Because it was so great. It was so perfect for that character that I was like, I love that she has lipstick on her teeth.
I did love Penny's character. The thing with that character that kind of got me a little bit confused is how they started her off. She was very fast-paced, very awkward, and set that tone. And then she, every time we kept seeing her throughout the movie, she completely dropped that and became more of a normal person. And right. that's what lost it to me, because I thought, if you're going to have that weird, awkward, kooky, mm-hmm. funny, dysfunctional woman, then have that consistent. Mm-hmm. But yeah. they only had that the first encounter with her, and then she became more normal.
The first encounter, you know, she's nervous. She's obviously like
and
this guy for a while.
And she said she'd been popping antidepressants.
Yeah.
maybe she stopped. I don't know.
Maybe.
You know, could, who knows? But I agree. There was a little bit of lack of consistency. But they, for whatever reason, they made it work. But what I wanted to talk about, because I think everybody here agrees that the acting was on point and everybody enjoyed it. So let's talk about the cast that they could have had.
Yeah.
Well,
director.
You know,
this is so
well, it's
interesting
too, because this movie had gone through many different
yes.
iterations.
Yes.
And being picked up and having been done. And Adam Shankman, actually, Rock of Ages and Hairspray.
Mm-hmm.
He was
great.
The first guy. I don't think the movie might have worked as well, but he was the first director attached. Mm-hmm. And the only mainstay, the only through line is actually Jason Bateman was attached.
Yeah, he's still going to be the lead.
But then they were going to have Jason Sudeikis, Malin Ackerman, Zac Efron, and Leslie Mann were mm-hmm. supposed to be in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And when the project fell into development hell, even Shankman and Bateman dropped out, and mm-hmm. the project pretty much that was done, but it paved the way for Levy.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came on board, it was just Levy said the casting for this he felt was very easy, because he was very shocked as to how many people approached him
to be
in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow!
Yeah, and plus he had worked with Tina Fey before, and you know, but people like you know he had approached like Tina Fey.
Mm-hmm.
But Bateman wanted to be back in the movie. He mm-hmm. wanted to be, and everybody was like, "Oh, this is a really great project. I want to be in the project." And so when he put together his family, mm-hmm. he said it was one of the easiest casting. He was very pleasantly surprised. So, but how different of a movie would it
have
been?
Oh, my gosh. It would be a Judd Apatow-style comedy with that first cast with Malin Ackerman and Zac Efron and Leslie Mann and Jason Sudeikis.
And then those fight scenes would have gone on.
Yeah. yeah. It just,
the writing.
It just would have been so different. But it's also funny because the family's Jewish, and I don't imagine any of those people. I mean,
let's use Jewish in quotes.
Right, true, true. That is true. I mean, they did have the great line of, mm-hmm. Mom, this is where we put our Christmas tree.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, but I don't know. I guess I, like, bought this mm-hmm. family as, like, them being like, okay, fine, this is something we have to do.
Right.
We get it. I don't know. The old potential family.
A-team, I'll call them.
They're the A-team. Shocked.
Yeah, it would have been a different movie.
It would
movie.
Be like...
I think
completely
so.
Different movie.
And no offense to either one of them, I'm not sure they would have had the chemistry that we ended up getting. Not
well,
that
knows?
They're not good at... I know. We don't
just,
know that.
We just don't know.
But I agree. I think it would have been a different movie. And I'm not sure it would have worked as well.
Yeah, I would love to see this cast do one scene.
Yeah, it would have been.
You know what I mean? Like, with Adam Shankman directing it, maybe there's like a dance number in it. I don't know. I mean, he's such an amazing choreographer, but I would love to see like a little funny or die.
Mm-hmm.
Short
oh, interesting.
Of them right. doing like one scene, like just, these are the characters.
Well, maybe they'll do
play.
The play.
Just I like this scene where they're talking about how we're sitting Shiva. No, we don't do that. Can we do it for 3 days? And they're debating and having this.
That was very funny.
Rabbi's going, no, Shiva means seven.
Yeah.
No. That'd be a fun
this
little scene.
This is negotiable.
Yeah.
I love it. They tried to negotiate everything, and I love that they all knew. They were like, no, I've already gone through all the things. And they're like, oh, okay, we trust that you've negotiated this.
Yeah. Clearly,
I love that aspect.
Patterns.
Yeah. That was great.
So that would have been a totally different movie, but interesting.
It just would have been a different feel, I think.
One of the other things I heard about from Jonathan Tropper, who wrote the book, of course, and mm-hmm. then also wrote the screenplay, is that he had written the screenplay, and then one of the things that Sean Levy brought to it was that he wanted to bring a bunch of stuff back from the book and put it into the script, because obviously often when you're trying to develop a book into a movie, you have to eliminate so much of it. And according to Levy, he eliminated too much. He wanted to, which is very rare.
Right.
Most directors want keep cutting.
Right.
And he wanted to bring a stuff. So that may have been one of the reasons why stuff that, according to Dimitri, when you know you were saying that so much was thrown in, it might have been due to that, because Sean wanted a bunch of stuff brought back in.
That's true. I mean, you
Who
never
knows?
Know. I mean, you know, I find this movie, you know, as Topper, he didn't, he didn't expect this book to be optioned. And I can almost understand that in today's day and age. Mm-hmm. This isn't really the type of movies that a Warner Brothers is looking for. So it's even more surprisingly that Warner Brothers got this successful.
It wasn't a huge...
No, it wasn't huge, but let's... Mm-hmm. When we
so you
talk
can see
about,
why they wouldn't.
And he was like, they picked this up, and he goes, it's not the kind of movies they make.
Right.
And even Jason Bateman had even said, he goes, this sort of plays out like an independent movie. Like, mm-hmm. this isn't a big studio type of a movie.
And, but you can see why all the actors want to do it, because what role is there a bad role? They all have their moments. Right. They all have their little arc thing going on.
That's what I loved about this. Yeah, you get, that every character get had a full arc.
Yeah.
When with big ensemble films like this, especially one where you have a main character, Jason Bateman is definitely the lead. It's definitely his story.
Mm-hmm.
But gosh, what I left the theater thinking was, wow, every character had a full arc and they all were buttoned up pretty nicely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not everybody got the happy ending they wanted. Like Tina Fey's character, I'm sure we all wanted her to stay, leave her husband. We're like, come on, you can do it. But it was so great how everyone had such a realistic, full arc in an ensemble film, which I feel like is very hard. But I think we should credit, you know, the screenwriter and the fact that it was a book. You know, they have their ways to be able to really give characters great endings. And I left this movie being like, that's great. Because I love when every character can go through their full arc and it ends. It makes sense, the ending.
Yeah.
I hate when things just... You're like, that was a cop-out ending. They just threw that out there.
Yeah, no, and it could have been, too. Because I also have to credit directing and editing. Because... Mm. Mm-hmm. It was, again, the way Sean Levy reined everybody in, you know, we've got this, got a ton of people. Mm-hmm. Each has, again, everybody has problems. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, in that's plural.
Yeah, sure.
And so how do you rein this in? And then how do you choose, like, I'm going to keep something here, but I need a through line. And mm-hmm. I want to make sure that everybody's buttoned up at the end in one way, shape, or form. How do I do this within an hour and 42 minutes or whatever? And I thought he did a really good job in this because usually...
Night of the Museum helped him with all those characters.
Well, but he said that his... Well, he says his commercial filmmaking really helped with his patience and being able to map things out. But he'd always been wanting to do a smaller kind of a movie. Mm-hmm. And he's been... hoping to do this. Apparently, he read the book like 5 years ago, and he's been wanting to make this type of movie for a while. So he finally got his, you know, his dream come true, and he did a good job.
And it's not just the main characters with the story arcs; it's the secondary characters too.
Yeah.
Even with Tracy and Wade, the girlfriend Connie Britton, she's amazing. In Nashville, she even had her arc at the end. Like they had nice, clean endings to those characters, as well, and they had reasons for their exits.
Sure.
And then even with Wade, we know he's the a-hole boss that slept with Jason Bateman's wife, and. But then he, at the end, had that realization, I was like, I deserve to get my car flipped over. And he's like, I'm going to take this moment to reflect on my life. And he walks away. And then they had clean endings as well. And, I mean, that's hard to balance in an hour and 45-minute movie.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah. Did anybody else just cringe a little inside when his car got flipped over? Like, you wanted it to happen, but at the same time, you're like, I hope that wasn't a real, like, you're like, oh, gosh.
Right. I did because we saw those guys minutes before being big fans of him.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, hey, that's the radio personality. Mm-hmm. And then to immediately switch, like,
they heard what he was saying.
They heard what he was saying, and they know what his show's about, exactly. I think, is what helped them to be like, wait a sec, what did he do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, again, to me, it was like, that's one of the things that just falls under coincidence. They happen to be all walking out. But my favorite line in that is, I got $43. It's like, what did he do? He goes, he slept with my wife. Keep it. I love that scene. It was a funny scene, and then his car just happened to be parked right up there in front. And
where else would he park? He's so narcissistic. Of course he's gonna park there.
But again, it was a good. I just liked it.
But the audience
wants $43.
But here's the thing: the audience wants it. It's completely coincidental.
It's the most obnoxious car.
So it's like, give the audience it because they want it. He's a schmuck.
No, absolutely. I didn't mind it.
Yeah.
Again,
But that's, again, when the car's like, of course it's, that's what I'm thinking. Of course it's going to be there. Why not?
So I don't know why, but I didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
This was in the trailer, and it's when Tina Fey, you know, gives him a good left hook and with her big old diamond ring, and she yells princess cut. And you know that, like, that is, that style of comedy would have been in the first, the A-Team cast. You know, that would have been, like, so much more of that. But I'm glad they kept that little line in, because there's something about that that you're like, go girl. Like, that was your one punch you threw all movie. See,
and I was thinking it was actually the only real punch that was thrown. All the other guys was like, what? But she threw the only punch, which
and,
is great.
And I was thinking,
and by the way, the NFL was... disregarded any knowledge of it, and they didn't see the video, so moving on.
But, and again, it goes to that, you know, the way she delivered the line, she goes, you're idiots, but you're my idiots, And again, we've heard this line before, but it's just, it's Tina Fey delivering it as this character. You buy it.
I do, because she's a great big sister, even though she wasn't big.
I thought this
when Adam had that moment when he says, you know, look, you're the voice I hear.
That was a good time.
That was a tear moment for me. That was one of the crying moments because that was so great.
And then they cut it, of course, with him picking her up and going, oh my God, you know, so you
again,
get to
have it. Yeah.
So
again, the emotional upheavals is great.
I thought they did a really good job picking those moments, because you have to find them somewhere. I don't know if they're in the book because I didn't read it, but this movie makes me want to read the book. But they did a really good job of finding the moments that just the head thing at the end, and you know when you think it's just ridiculous, and Adam and Jason are putting their foreheads together, and he goes, are we doing this ironically? You can believe that. We can say that if you want. And the way Adam delivers his last line where he says, okay, keep in touch, and he's just inside bawling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, that was a really good
the
moment.
The movie had a good sincerity, which, again, with not the right cast, it could have been into maudlin. It could have really gone the other way. But the sincerity that was carried in this movie and the way that they interacted with one another. And again, I do think it's the way that it was filmed, because they actually did film it in a house.
Yeah.
They filmed in a house. Mm-hmm. They didn't have like green rooms. When they were in between takes, it's like, oh, let's go up to the guest room and let's play Uno or something. So I think that helped with their camaraderie.
Yeah, that helps them build all those
And I really felt that even after they said cut, they would be like, hey, what are you doing?
Exactly.
Let's go grab a beer.
Just keep going on.
Right.
Keep playing. Yeah.
So I think that really helped, and so the sincerity didn't become too mushy.
Yes, I totally agree.
Yeah,
and I think I think that's why this movie worked, is because it wasn't that mushy. It was like immediately you have like a touching moment, and then either a loving touching moment and comedy came after, or like another thing was thrown in, and you're like, oh, geez, man. Like, Jason Bateman, she's pregnant now.
She's pregnant.
Like, exactly. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course she's pregnant.
Chloe
brings up a very interesting point. I want to discuss it, because we think it worked, although the critics are very mixed reviews, getting 47, 50, whatever it is.
43% on Rotten Tomatoes.
There you go.
Okay.
And so, you know, a lot of them are not liking it as much as we did, or are thinking it's way more melodramatic or modern. That's how they're viewing it. Obviously, the audience is much different, because they're seeing it about 71.
Cinema score is a B+, which is for this kind of a movie, especially when you're looking at the audience. I mean, we're not going for teenagers here.
No.
So, you know, B+ isn't too bad. Right. And you know, we
can
talk about
it, actually.
Look, the total budget, including P&A, is $50 million. Mm-hmm. Okay, but the production budget's close to 20. It's like 19.8. So 20 mil. We'll round it up. That's considering the cast that we have. Sean Levy has directed some $100 million movies. Right. He's a commercial success. He's proven. So for him to make a $20 million movie, you get this cast together, $20 million.
Yep.
So you know they were frugal. They had a good,
but I couldn't tell. Again, the actors are going, wait a minute. So it's pretty much one location. So it's an easy shoot. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be with this cast. So that's going to be fun.
Right.
And I'm going to make some... I'm in. Because I get to deliver all these lines. My character has an arc. And what's the downside?
Yeah, what's the downside?
Yeah.
There's no downside here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And I was just thinking of another funny line. And again, it works because of, I think, Tina Fey and Jane Fonda. It's when she's cuddling up with her.
Yeah.
She goes,
yeah.
Oh, these things are really comfortable. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I loved Jane Fonda in this. I love Jane Fonda. And I think she just plays these types of characters so well. And I think Tina as her daughter was so great, because Tina seems like her mom would be like that. Like, the way she can just deliver funny lines, like, you know, mom, she has, if I should tip the nurse, she told me to tip the nurse. Like, she just is so good and, like, at digging at her mom, which I think is, like, might be hard for other people. Yeah. And it just, it totally works with those two.
And you know, and I'm thinking, like, I was trying to think of, like, who Jason Sudeikis would have played.
Right.
Because, you know, again, Jason Bateman, like, Jason Sudeikis.
Gotta be Adam, right?
Because
it couldn't be the older brother, Corey. I mean,
no, it was either him or yeah,
no,
I don't know.
No, because I think Zac Efron. I think Zac Efron would have been the younger brother.
What?
Yeah.
That would make sense.
And I think Malin Ackerman would have been Peggy, and then Leslie Mann would have been Tina Fey's character.
Mm-hmm. See, I could see Leslie Mann as Penny.
Penny?
Sure.
Instead
I could see her as the
other
sister
that's
as well.
True.
Well,
Malin be the sister.
I might have believed Leslie is more of a daughter than Jane just by looking at them.
Well, because, I mean, Jason Sudeikis could have actually played Judd as well.
I think so, too.
To an extent,
yeah,
right? But, again, right. when I think about the scene...
Jason
with,
was already...
When I see the scene with Jason, but
yeah.
I don't know if he was Judd. I know he was
on
board.
He was
always
the lead.
Even when,
always the
with
lead.
Shankman.
Yeah, that's what that's my research, that he was always the lead.
Because I love that scene where, you know, he's like, oh, Mom, just button. Yeah. You know, she goes, oh, come on, you suck a lot. He goes, no. I don't think Jason Sudeikis would have been I look at Jason Sudeikis more like a Chevy Chase, which is not a bad thing. That's a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
Depending
on what movie you're talking about, but let's go on.
Not Modern Problems, but like Vacation. But I think that the way Jason Bateman delivers a line, he's got that underlying current of sarcasm that I love that. And the way he's able to say, Mom, come on, button up. Mm-hmm. And that conversation too made me laugh. And it was in the trailer, but I didn't mind seeing it again in the full-fledged movie. And it's good stuff.
I only saw it in the movie.
Yeah.
What? How much have they made so far? If the budget was about $20 million, how are they doing?
To date, the total gross is around $15-16 million. And that's the worldwide box office is around $15-16 million. It's not there isn't
and
much
it's not
disparity.
A specialty box office, right?
That's a wide release for Warner Brothers. Yeah. And
I think
again,
this one will be one that'll grow, though. I think this isn't like
I don't know
it
because
top
it's
then...
not getting great. Well, I don't know. I don't think it's getting great word of mouth at the moment.
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out this weekend.
Sure, of course.
You know, because I think if memory serves, I think this beat out. The Liam Neeson movie, Walk Amongst the Tombstones. I think this came in a little bit higher than
that. Well, the nice
thing
is there's nothing else out there like it,
right.
So it's not competing with anything in its category, so to speak.
And
so.
I think the timing is perfect, too, because it's right before, you know, the Oscar season is about to start, and it's that nice balance between comedy, which we get a lot in the summer, and then drama, which we get a lot in the fall. So it's the perfect time for this film.
Yeah.
I would have thought that just a little bit later would have been better just because, you know, it's family. And, you know, you family starts to happen.
Like a Thanksgiving time.
Exactly. But it's not, you know, because there's a death, maybe they went, yeah, let's not do it Thanksgiving.
Yeah, but if you look at a release schedule in November.
Yeah, it's so packed.
Yeah, it's going to be so packed. So
that's what I was thinking, October. Yeah. Right.
I don't know if you guys have heard about after what happened at Toronto, but all those films at Toronto are getting Oscar buzz. And so it's like, and those will be getting November releases.
Oh, it came out, I think, at the right time.
I think so, too.
Yeah. And so, you know, but Warner Brothers put in $30 million, you know, at the very least, $30 million, give or take, to advertise it.
Yeah.
And all. So they were behind it. It's curious. I mean, I watch TV, but a lot of it's DVR. So I fast forward through the commercials. Has anybody watched live TV? I mean, I don't know what they did for their second week television campaign. If they had one.
I haven't seen a second week campaign where they sort of throw in.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, where they sort of throw in all the, you know, critics say this kind of things. But. I actually thought the trailer didn't do it justice. I sort of think the trailer didn't bring in that like warm quality that you get when you see it. It sort of tried to play up the comedy, you know, to get you in there. Oh, this is going to be a funny ensemble cast. But I don't know. I almost wish they would have made an indie type style trailer to go along with, you know, giving you the softer moments right next to the comedy moments. I think would have been nicer because in the trailer, you know, we get the Jane Fonda boob joke, we get the left hook princess cut, you know, the Tina Fey joke. So you go into it, I don't know, it's seeming like a comedy, but it's not, you know, laugh out loud stoner, Judd Apatow style comedy. So I almost wish they would have done sort of the indie feel just to see, you know, like where, if that would have pulled people who really enjoy ensemble films.
Yeah, and for me, it was the trailer that, I mean, number one, it was the cast.
Yeah,
you know, I saw these people, and for me, anyways, in the trailer, they gave Jason Bateman his little sarcasm. They gave Tina Fey. I saw Corey Stahl, and I'm like, hey, that's the House of Cards guys. Mm-hmm. Wow, what a cast, Jane Fonda. And for me, seeing the cast in what looked to be a funny movie that I had a feeling was going to be this family dramedy, but it looked like there was going to be comedy in it. I was like, oh, this movie looks good. And, you know, I just didn't expect like, oh, okay. So I loved how it opened too. Right. I mean, because that's where it brought us to, this is where I leave you, you know, and that brought me right in. But then it was like, hey, I'm pregnant. Hey, this is my girlfriend who's my therapist and she's older than me and I got a Porsche. And hey, I can't have a baby. And, you know, we're trying to work on this. I'm the ex-girlfriend to Jason Bateman.
The reason
Bateman
why all that worked for me is that it's just like, this is just a reflection of what's going on. And I was like, with all the reality TV, I thought he was making commentary on this is our privileged life. And these are our problems, which are ridiculous and not really problems. But in the absence of no other problems, these are our problems.
It was worked for me.
I thought it was commentary. I thought he was going, so of course, of course he's going to have a mommy complex. And that's why he's got an older therapist that he's sleeping with.
Oh, that line, when Jay Fonda brings that out, you're like, like, she's the perfect one to say this to him.
So that's why it worked for me, because I was like, they're not reality-based television. But that's what America, that's what families are these days, especially middle class.
That's a sad commentary.
But it's true.
It is. I think it was honest.
Seriously.
I don't know if it's
popping Xanax.
Honest.
I mean, all of us, I mean, I have a bunch of antidepressants. She says
it would be hard-pressed you find one family that has all of those situations.
Oh, but
my point is, all of those situations.
Yeah. With that many siblings. Oh yeah.
But my point is that it's a reflection of what is in the zeitgeist right now.
Yeah.
In family, every family can relate to somebody in that family. That's Uncle Joey, or that's Cousin Tim, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they're just archetypes for, I mean, that's what I think. That's why I was like, of course she's going to have a lesbian affair. Why not?
Yeah.
At that point, I was.
Why not have this?
I didn't take it seriously. Like this is actually one family. I think it was just representative of everybody. And why not throw all that crap in there? Because that's all we see anyway. I thought it was just anyway. Go ahead.
I just want to talk about the little boy.
Oh yes.
I think we need to bring him up. I think he was the sweetest part of the film. And I love Jason Bateman's line about him. How they sort of wrapped it up and brought it in of like.
He's the only one who's happy.
Yeah, he's the only one.
He's got it figured out. He knows the answer to life. A big dump. It's just a really satisfying dump, and that's all you need.
And, like, find me one adult who's happy. And, like, I just love it. I was like, that little boy going to the bathroom, like, carrying his
toy. And it's so metaphorical because, you know, everybody else's life is shit, and all this kid is just trying to hit one little to them.
And he goes out, on the porch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See again, but the balance between drama when a dramatic scene happened, and then you throw that little joke in there. It's like, yep, it's funny again.
Yeah. And again, I give that credit to Sean Levy. I mean, I think in this movie, like from everything that he's learned before and he's done before, to make this, you know, because he called this his personal movie in a sense. So, you know, I think that's why he worked. There was almost a Ron Howard kind of sensibility to this movie, and that's why I was thinking of Parenthood, because again you have all these different things going on. And
I want to speak to that because one of the things that I think what Chloe was mentioning is that there's an indie aspect to it. I don't know exactly who said it, but because not only marketing, but the film itself is not it's not as polished as a Parenthood, which is much cleaner in its structure and even in everything, in its editing, even in its ending, much cleaner and stuff. And I liked it. I'm not saying disparaging it. I'm just saying it's cleaner. This one to me is a little bit messier, and even in the end there's some ambiguity because even he doesn't say I'm going to call you. Oh no, 6 months later. I mean, there's all this kind of craziness. And I thought the messiness of it was in speaking to what's happening right now. That's why I liked that it wasn't completely all wrapped up in nice and stuff.
And I was thinking that they wouldn't make, like, I was happy that they were able to get this movie made and Warner Brothers did it, but I was thinking of Parenthood going, yeah, we're never going to get a Parenthood movie again. Because that's not what Hollywood is making.
No, that's not.
They're not making it. So the mere fact that this that one did, literally got off the ground and was made, you know, to the shock of the writer, the director.
Yeah, and everybody's like, are they really going to let us make this?
Yeah, are they going to make let us make this movie? Yeah. And we get to make this movie, and it's 20 mil. It's like...
And it's not a Kickstarter. Like,
no.
It's,
but back in the day, a Parenthood movie, that would be, oh, you get Ron Howard, Steve Martin, you get this Rick Moranis. It's like, done.
Yeah.
We're going to make this movie because this is a good script. It's going to be funny. And people went. Those aren't the movies that Hollywood is making today. Mm-hmm. So if Parenthood were on the table today,
it probably
wouldn't be made. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm happy that this movie was made. You know, and
I wonder if people like Jason Bateman and, you know, Tina Fey helped to get it made.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
You know, with them knowing the way Hollywood makes movies.
Well, it wouldn't have got made without them. I mean,
for sure. And I wonder if they were like, gosh, you know what? Mm-hmm. We haven't done a type of film like this in a while, you know? And, you know, if we get attached and if we stick on, like, they'll make it. And I sort of feel like that must have happened because how else would they, you know?
And again, I even think because of, say, Bateman and Fey, like, okay, so say you have Sudeikis and Malin Ackerman. I mean, it was going to go forward, but maybe they cut back. I mean, I think that Bateman and Fey have a little bit more clout.
I think so, too.
No offense to those fine actors that I was talking about, but I just think that they've...
Well,
they
the
have
writer...
The cash
right. Yeah, Tina Fey's like writing, producing. Like she.
It's easier for them to open a movie with Bateman and Fey.
Sure. And, you know, and Levy, you know, he credits... He's like, you know, for a script like this to be made by a studio that is funny... And sad, and is not about a superhero, and is not a tentpole. I mean, there were a few actors who didn't chase this.
That's what I mean. So that's, I'm an actor, that's get me in there.
And the hope for me, I don't mind the superhero movie.
No.
I don't mind that. But the hope is
there's more of these too. That's
yes, you can squeeze them in.
Well, so that's why I want people to go, so they'll make more of them. Because you know, bringing in 16 mil ain't enough.
And it's not like a teen, you know, teen book. Fan craze.
Well, and let's face it, it's also an R, isn't it?
Oh.
It had to be, I think.
Because there's a language and drugs and stuff like that. So, I mean, going even that makes it even more difficult for them to make their money back.
Sure.
It's like, jeez.
But it's nice to have a movie like this. Yeah. Even, you know, it's R, it entertains, you know, and again, regardless of my misgivings, like maybe you go ahead and you do something else, but you can make dramedies, you can make funny movies. Again, just look to what they used to do.
Yeah.
They were able to make them for a mass audience because, like, a Parenthood made a lot of money. So you could make movies like this, and it doesn't have to be independent.
But they don't
want to
take the chance on it, that's all.
Yeah, I understand.
They don't see the money in it.
I wonder, too,
if they
don't...
Can't sell it overseas.
Yeah, I wonder, too, if they don't make movies like this, not only for overseas, but because TV's so great now, and most TV shows are these style.
Yeah, but the reason why TV's so great is those writers can't make those movies, so they went...
They left film and went to TV.
Because
that's what I'm wondering, you know, like, if... Maybe it's because we want to see stuff like this on, you know, we want to see it in episodes. Mm-hmm. I want to dive into all these characters over three, you know, I want each of them to have their own full episode. And maybe that's
I'm
why.
I'm on a different perspective because I go, I can only spend 2 hours with them because they're so ridiculous and there's so many problems. I go, no, because it's the same thing. It's like I can watch reality TV for a little bit because you can see the train wreck and have fun. But I don't like to stay in the train wreck. I'm done with the train wreck.
But, like, I definitely, to speak to that, you should definitely watch NBC's Parenthood because it's the whole family dynamic. It's just literally siblings and families. Every episode is just their story and how they just keep going.
And Dax Shepard isn't such a douchebag.
And again, though, I'll go back to, like, you know, at the beginning here, I did say, like, to me, this reminded me something that could have been played out episodically in 13. Mm-hmm. In, like, 13 episodes where each character, like you said, would have their own episode.
You'd see the whole backstory,
the drama, and like,
again, that's the thing. Yeah. They already have that.
And again, in a television show, you sort of kind of you swallow it because you know it's an hour long, and okay, so this is, and then the next episode they might focus on something else and pick up on the drama in the last one, but you're able to spread that out over 13, 15 episodes. And this one, you have an hour and 42 minutes. They threw in everything but the kitchen sink. Although I was a little bit surprised, and I wouldn't have been upset. Like, okay, so we know that he was going to take the exit to Maine.
Sure.
Like, when you saw him in the car.
Yeah,
and you knew
he was going to take the Porsche.
Because
we
knew he was going to take Maine earlier at the ice rink.
But I thought he was going to stop by the ice rink and goes, hop in the car.
No, I'm
where
kidding.
Are we going? No, I know.
Far too.
Yeah, but oh, that's going over the line. Yeah,
that would just be far too easy. But here's the thing.
Yeah, that would be like Tina, you know, leaving her husband and going with the neighbor.
Well,
like
that guy was a jerk.
Yeah,
he was totally. You wanted her to do that, but it's
but there is no future with her. You know, that's the thing.
There could have been, but it's.
But
nice.
even the guy with a brain injury realizes there's no future in it. That's the tragedy of it, which is why it was perfect. I love that. Like, no, of course they're not going to get together.
I just sort of. I mean, I actually found that the chemistry between Bateman and Rose there, I thought. He's even better than he and his wife, but they had more screen time together, of course. But
his wanted to see them.
His wife
also played a big bitch.
Quinn.
Abigail
Spencer.
To be. Yeah, everyone was just like, no.
Yeah.
I mean, you met
her.
She was great.
She was great.
She's great at the role, but you did not want Jason Bateman to be with her.
No, he didn't.
And I'm glad he didn't.
Even though Penny's telling him, who is it? I think it was Tina was saying, you'll forgive her because that's what you do and stuff.
Yeah.
It's easy. You didn't at all ever think that he might get back together with her?
A little bit.
There was one moment when he went to the hospital after the thing. I was like, oh boy.
But then Dax Shepard came in and you were like, yes, go.
Exactly.
One of my favorite lines was the doctor saying, both of you get out.
Yeah.
And good job, you got us kicked out.
Yeah.
Just great.
And of course he's going to take the thing to Maine.
Right.
And it makes sense. Some sort of arc fun. Sure.
You know, and then, you know, the hopeless romantic is that the thing that I didn't get was the whole, I understand 6 months, he's going to take care of his responsibility, but in the same time, it doesn't mean that he can't. Hey, I'm going to, it doesn't mean
Well, it's like an alcoholic. First you get a plant, then when you handle the plant, then you get a pet, and then when you handle the pet, then you can have it. So he's saying, I need to be alone for 6 months just to get my shit together. So Chloe's going to step out. She has an appointment. Thanks very much for joining us, Chloe. We'll see you later. So that's the only thing I'm saying there is that, I mean, I thought actually it's kind of brave for him. He's been, his life was so, managed and safe that the unsafe place is alone.
Yeah.
And that's actually a good character beat. So I kind of enjoyed that part of it. So the other thing I wanted to talk to, we haven't talked at all about the technical aspects.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to editing because we kind of brushed. So I thought they edited, what'd you say, an hour 40?
Yeah, it's like an hour and 43 minutes.
I had no idea the length of the movie. So for me, that was a good thing because usually I'm looking at my watch going, okay, why are we here forever? So I actually thought it was paced well. I didn't.
I think the pacing was so on point, especially with so many characters that we were introduced to, and to again going back to everyone coming full circle.
Mm-hmm.
I think the timing was very well balanced, and there was not one scene that I thought went on too long or too short.
I agree, and we've talked about this before that, especially in comedy,
right.
A lot of it outside of your actors and actresses, a lot of it comes to editing.
Yes.
How long am I going to let something stay or am I going to cut it too short so that the joke
Find
doesn't
the
have time to be, or am I going to let it go on so that they hit the funny moment and then it just becomes boring.
Right.
So Dean Zimmerman did a really good job with the pacing. And again, I never felt that this movie overstayed
its
welcome.
I'm going to go back to this because he was also not in the museum. You got to know that that must have helped him. I mean, not that he needed it, but just the carrying so much and finding the sweet spot and then getting out and moving on.
Yeah,
because
agreed.
A lot of, you know, we talked about Judd Apatow, whether or not you're a fan or not. The things
We've
that drive me crazy
so
about his movies is like, you hit the sweet spot, move on. Now you're just driving me crazy and it's annoying.
We've talked about that a lot in this, but it's very key in comedy.
Yeah.
It's key for your comedic actor, and it's key for your director because the director has to, director has to know when to say cut.
Yeah. And whoever's shooting it needs to know how to shoot a comedy.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked really good. And again, I think I really enjoyed that this was in a house. Like, I enjoyed
it. Because, it harkens back to every time you go home. It's like, I just love that. Even the shiva chairs. Because you had to be, I mean, it already puts you back as being a kid.
Yeah.
Because you're sitting in those damn chairs.
Right.
It's like, you know.
It's the environment that helped progress those characters back to who they were and how they felt back when, you know, they used to live.
Because we all drop into our roles.
I think it was so great in that aspect. And also just the lighting. Because overall, it was a fairly well-lit movie for a comedy. And if it was drama, you'd think it'd be, there'd be some moments moody. Where it'd be dark and moody. But the whole movie was consistently pretty well lit. And it felt like more of a comedy in that aspect.
And it's funny because Terry Stacey, who's the cinematographer, when you're looking at his filmography,
yeah,
you know, 50-50, P.S. Yeah. I Love You, great. Adventureland, American Splendor. He did independent movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
and it kind of had that look.
Yeah, absolutely. But it worked in this case because it lent a bit of a realism
yes.
to the craziness that's mm-hmm. going along.
It looked very practical in the sense of right. we're using practical light. It looked just yeah. like you were there.
Yeah, the only thing, and again, the only thing that they didn't throw in is that it took place during Thanksgiving.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly. I mean, that's kind of what I was thinking. So, of course it's, yeah.
But, you know, I think that the, and actually Sean Levy has mentioned that, you know, it was this funeral process. This is how our Jason Bateman character, mm-hmm. like this is how he heals. Mm-hmm. It is by going back home.
Yeah.
And he's able and to also bond.
Having him shoved in the basement. So he has time, you know, everything's happening above him, so to speak. And I love that I don't know if that was the book or not or where that came to be, but I love that they shoved him in the basement because, you know, talk about being the lowest point in your life. You have no job, you have no wife.
And now you're in the basement, you can't put the bed down.
Exactly. Yeah. So there you go. That's where we are. That's where we're starting, and it can only get better.
Am I right?
I love how he kept just trying to open in the bed, yeah. you know, just for the time.
You're
like, nope, it's not going.
But am I right? It was Catherine Hahn was right. also in Bad Words.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, yes. So I would have died if mm-hmm. at one point when she was in Bad Words, she was yeah. like, well, just don't look at me.
Yeah. yeah.
I would have died. I would have yeah. thought that was yeah. hysterical.
Ridiculous.
Because it was like, oh, they're back together yes, again. I was yeah. like, oh, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. I buy that. Mm-hmm. I, you know, I like that.
And even with her, like her as an actress, every single role that she plays, it's the always nutbag. Crazy. Yeah. Really yeah. out there, and then seeing her mm-hmm. in this film, I was surprised. I mean, it was great. Another funny character.
She wasn't the craziest.
Yeah, but then like because when they introduced her, she's like, okay, she's actually a normal yeah. wife. And yeah. then to have that scene, I was like, okay, yep, there's the crazy scene. Yeah. That's crazy probably why she's this character.
And,
yeah.
and you mentioned Connie Britton earlier, who again, I didn't know she was. I don't recall her in the trailer or the TV campaign.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I knew.
However,
great
you know,
job on Friday Night Live.
Yeah, and for her, she was Nashville. Like, you know, her. I remember her from first season of American Horror Story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's great in West Wing.
Yeah.
Way back when.
So, yeah. but, you know, and again, you know, when asked about, what was your favorite scene? She goes, oh, it was a scene that wasn't put in the movie. She goes, we actually had a sex scene.
She and Adam, I guess?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. yeah. And she said that was her favorite part. So now I'm like, well, if that's fun. Your favorite part, I'm like, I wanted to, I yeah. mean, I'm
wondering see, how you know, comedic have to wait for it the was. Deleted scenes, yeah.
Or how many other scenes got cut.
I wonder if it had anything to do with some sort of mommy reference or something.
I hope not.
Tell me about your problems.
Exactly. You know, the therapist is like, that was just so odd.
Yeah. But, you know, and you know, you sort of wished. You know, I got the sense that the Adam Driver character, I forget his name right now,
Philip.
I had the sense that Philip was starting to mature a little.
Yeah, finally.
I mean, well, right? Am I like?
Yeah,
he
yeah,
wasn't,
yeah. He was on the cusp of actually being a man.
Yeah, I got the notion that he was, you know, he was maturing, and because during
fighting
the whole
the
scene
way.
When they're talking about exactly. the business, he was like, "No, if he did X, Y, and Z," mm-hmm. I was like, "Okay, he has business chops. He could
a little
be.
Bit, yeah,
yeah,
yeah." So,
or at least he knows what to say.
Yeah,
I mean,
he
I don't
could
know
be successful in that way.
Yeah, because like there was that whole thing with Corey Stahl mm-hmm. as he's like, with Paul and. Paul and Judd were walking. He goes, well, I hired Philip. And he goes, yep. yeah. He goes, how long do you think that's going to last? He goes, mm-hmm. oh, it's not. And I was like mm-hmm. thinking, you know, though, it might. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, for one fleeting moment, I was thinking, you know what? Jason Bateman's going to stick around and mm-hmm. he's going to right. help out with the family business. And mm-hmm. then that way he can be with Rose Byrne. And why wouldn't
true.
That happen in this?
But again, that goes to the arc because the whole arc about him is that everything was too safe. That's the safe route is to go home, have this family surround you, support you, help you. And that's way
sure.
too safe for him. And if he's going to have an arc, you can't do that.
Okay.
Because he's trying to. But the other thing I was interested to talk about, because we were mentioning Philip, is that when he's sitting there in the car and he's saying, don't get out of the car, don't get out of the car. And of course, you know, later, because his shirt's inside out, he got out of the car. So. And that's very good, because he's a guy that's not ready to change. He's right. not interested in it. He knows he should. He wants to, but he's not going to.
Yeah, and I always, and again, though, even coming towards the end, mm-hmm. he's sort of, I actually, call me silly, but I actually did believe that he liked Tracy, the Connie Britton character.
Yeah,
I really think that.
Yeah.
And I think with her leaving, mm-hmm. I think that really, I do think that that affected him, mm-hmm. and that could have been one of his like things going.
Yeah.
I gotta become a catalyst. I gotta do something.
I can't keep doing this.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and I sort of kind of think if we were ever to revisit that, maybe mm-hmm. that business would be okay. Maybe he and Corey Stoll would get together.
Well, you know what's interesting is they painted it enough to allow us to believe that they could overcome this stuff, because they were able to overcome all the nonsense that they was thrown at them. But there is the possibility that these two brothers could actually work together and that they could make something successful here.
And I also like, again, even though it was cliche, but the scene with Philip, with Judd and with Paul, when they were getting high in the classroom, and there was a line where like Paul's like, he goes, "Oh, I used to be so much fun," and Jason Bateman's like, "Judd's like, I got this one," and he's like, "You were never fun," and he's like, "What?" So, and the actor that played, I just call him Boner.
Oh yeah,
that guy was Ben Schwartz, Rabbi Charles Gordner, aka Boner. Mm-hmm. He was really funny too. I don't know. I don't go to temple often, but I don't see a rabbi being...
No. Oh, my God. Like when he was in the temple, it was so ridiculous.
Like, what is he doing?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I really liked his character and just his one joke, you know, Boner. The mm-hmm. fact that you think we as an audience member would get tired of that joke, but the fact that everyone, even the mother, called him Boner, still was funny every single time they called him that.
And it was funny because, again, they spread it out, mm-hmm. and it was his reaction, and it was like the slow burn, like, "Oh, don't call me that, don't call me that, oh, don't call me that," and each time he would get a little bit louder, and then when finally Jane Fonda, he goes, "Oh, you too." It's like it's funny.
And even when Horry does it, by the way, one of the funniest moments for me was when Horry, after it's revealed that let me get the character's name, Jane Fonda's character, Miss Hillary, has a lover. The lesbian lover. And then Horry goes, "Oh, you guys didn't..."
Oh, yeah, you guys, none of you knew that, huh?
You guys didn't get down to that?
He had the one up. Yeah.
It was a great line coming from him. I was like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, of course he knew."
And again, you know, just, again, he was in the car with Tina Fey that they had the accident, and, you know, but, again, I saw their relationship, and I liked it more than... What she had.
Oh, yeah, but also...
And you know that it hurt her deep that she left. And, you know,
I thought what was great about it was that everything in her life obviously changed at that moment, and that whole possibility was gone for her. So, you know, they were saying, "Why is she with Barry?" I go, "She's with Barry because the person she really should be with is no longer."
Right.
Yeah.
So she... I mean, I understood that. It made sense.
Right.
I didn't, you know, whatever. And I just thought it worked.
This is the scene with Tina Fey, her as an actress, I was like, she could be a really good dramatic actress. And I was like, because we know her so much for comedy, I was like, she could really do drama.
It's always easier to go from comedy to drama.
It depends, that's debatable.
Yeah, I was thinking about, well...
Not to me.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking of Robin Williams, because we did our tribute to him and everything. And again, he was he's a guy that came from comedy.
Mm. And he studied at Juilliard, so I mean, he had his dramatic chops.
But a lot, we know him from like a lot of stand up routine and all this, and he was able to, again, I sort of tend to agree with where you're going with the comedy to drama, because if you have the comedic timing and the sensibility, even if it's a drama, even if it's a heavy drama, there's going to be some period in which there's going to be a light laugh, even if it's the heavy, you know, there's going to be some type of a bonding scene that might lighten up the movie a little bit, and I think Tina Fey can handle that. I think Jason Bateman can handle that. And, you know, it shows to their strengths, I think. And again, I think it's in part why they were able to elevate this movie and why an audience can go along with it. Because they didn't overplay it for the comedy. They didn't overplay it for the drama. You know, they didn't tear up the scenery. They were just right.
I think it was so, it felt so real.
It did.
Like, these are real emotions that if anyone did have go through a traumatic experience like that and did leave the love of your life, mm-hmm. they would feel that yeah. way. And I was emotionally, you know, a little bit distraught, like, watching that. I was like, oh, I really felt for her.
Mm-hmm. Same
for,
here.
You're talking about for
Tina? For Tina Fey, yeah. for Wendy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really heart-wrenching, actually, to see him and to know what could have been. That's terrible.
I like the scene where, you know, are you angry with me? And he's like, yeah. how can I ever be angry with you? And it wasn't because he forgot. It was, I can't be angry with you. And, you know, I liked how he called her Sunflower.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, Sunflower. And again, I think Timothy Oliphant brings something to the role. I've been a fan of his since Go. I think he's such a good actor, and that he too can handle some comedy and some drama, and he can be in action. And of course, he's in Justified. But he has this casualness about it. He has this gait, the way he walks. There's something about him that I find very charismatic whenever he's on screen, even when he's, say, slow. In this movie, I was very happy to see his name in the credits, and it actually made me want to watch this movie more. And I was waiting for him to show up, and I was like, okay, this is a little bit different for him.
Yeah.
So,
especially from Justified.
Absolutely. And then, you know, we didn't talk about music. The other pleasant surprise for me was one of my favorites. You know, I love my soundtracks. Mm-hmm. Michael Giacchino here, who most recently has done the Star Trek movies with J.J. Abrams. Mm-hmm. He's done Lost. You know, he's done Ratatouille and Up. And, you know, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes that we talked about. I mean, this guy has a resume. Mm-hmm. And
I wouldn't
without
have
seeing
that
his name
go,
in the credits, exactly. I wouldn't have guessed that this was Michael Giacchino. I thought it was the score was just played perfectly. Mm-hmm. I didn't find that it was overly schmaltzy or overtook a scene.
No, I didn't think so either.
So,
and I think Marissa has already said, I don't know if it was in the podcast or earlier, but I think she likes the Cyndi Lauper touch too.
The Cyndi Lauper touch, yeah. That was, I like the scenes in the skating rink. Yeah.
But to bring you back to the 80s or 90s, I mean, that's how they were supposed to be. You know, they regressed back to that time period. So it makes sense that would be their song.
Yeah,
quote,
it was
unquote.
Funny. So, she goes, you know how to skate, right? Yeah, I've been on this before. Whack! And he falls back, and she comes out and lays down next to him. And I thought that the scenes that they had together, I thought were touching. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted them to be together.
Sure, yeah. I think why it was successful. Because you want them to be together, and it's great that they aren't. They don't. Yeah. They don't end up together. We don't know what's going to happen 6 months. But
I was trying to be. I felt the last conversation that they had.
Right.
Because he did flat out say, he's like, look, I really like you. I don't know where this is going, you know, but I've got to do this, you know. But I was just thinking, well, I know you got to do this, but it doesn't mean you can't pick up a phone and call, and you can't take her out to dinner every now and then and build on that relationship. And there was one part where I felt she should have been a little bit more understanding, like about like the kid and all.
Right.
You know, she got really pissed at him.
Because went to the...
Well, yeah. And I was like, you got to cut him a little bit.
She was conflicted about it because she didn't know you really have to go. That part of it. But what I liked about the ending was that he was aware enough to know that... they even said it. I can't remember what the lines were. They basically, this was not the best way for us to be in a relationship because of everything that's happening. You can't really start a relationship in that.
Yeah, under that.
Which is great. Yeah. That's how I go, well, look at that arc. Because he's aware enough to realize I need to be alone here to clear my head to really be away from all this or at least to assimilate it before I start just jumping in to another relationship with somebody else, because I don't want to screw up that one like I missed with this one.
Right.
So for that part of it, it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. It was... Yeah. Like I said, for me, characters acting really elevated this movie, made it enjoyable. I laughed.
Yeah. I have to say, the audience I was with laughed a lot.
Same here.
Laughed a lot.
Same here.
Yeah.
I agree.
And not just, hey, isn't that funny? They're laughing funny where you can't hear the next line because they're still laughing. That's what happened in my audience.
Yeah. I think the moment where everyone just like raucous laugh was when the little boy threw the toilet. That was hysterical.
I had a number of laughs where it was just
Here. Same here.
You know, and where I was going, geez, I'm looking around going, wow, people are really enjoying this.
Yeah. Was it crowded when
It was half.
Yeah, I would say when I saw it, it was about half as well.
Yeah,
I was full.
And but and yeah. very, very.
I always go into full audience.
Well, good for you. Yeah. But a wide range of ages. It was you know, mixed gender, meaning half and half.
Yeah.
But I saw very, you know, 20-year-olds. I also saw 60-year-olds. So yeah. It was interesting. Yeah. It was a wide range.
There were no teenagers. That's all I can say. The audience that I went to. So. But I was
mostly in the adult demographic because, sure. You know, I believe it's rated R, so, yeah. So you would get the older people. And, you know, just going back to Jason Bateman and Tina Fey, they bring the older demographic mm-hmm. into mm-hmm. this type of film. So that makes
then
sense.
When we say older, anything over 25, I think is
wrong. Yeah, I mean, if you went with the A-team with Malin Ackerman yeah. and Leslie Mann, you would bring the 20, 30-year-olds, but I don't think you would get the older generation.
Mm. True.
And I think Tina Fey and Jason Bateman's their range, yeah. because of mm-hmm. SNL, because of 30 Rock, they can get the 40s, 50s, 60s, all of them.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. And again, I just go back, I not to be overly repetitive, I really think that they helped. I think with that A-cast that was originally brought on board, I think the movie would have had a different feel and rhythm to it.
Clearly.
And yeah. this rhythm, you know, with the, let's call it the B-team that ended up being on screen, mm-hmm. I don't see anybody doing any better than they did, and that's no disrespect to anybody. I just think that the rhythm that they had together, the camaraderie,
yeah,
I thought they played
their reality, and you know, even though I, as an audience, I wasn't looking at it as a reality, mm-hmm. but they played their. It was steeped in. You guys were saying it felt real.
No, yeah, not, yeah, it looked really good. I like the small town feel, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I know what that's like. Yeah. The small town having your family in one roof. For a long amount of time, I personally know what that's like, because mm-hmm. like I grew up with my siblings, we all literally lived yep. on the same block,
mm-hmm.
so we were constantly wow. in the same location, yeah. so I know what that, so watching this family, it hit home to me, because like yeah real families are like this when you put yeah. them together under one roof,
right?
Yeah, all your emotions are going to come out, and you're going to regress back to that younger state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I loved about it.
All right. Well, what else? Anything else before we get to last thoughts?
We've covered a lot of the tech the writing.
Yeah,
which we thought was good.
Yeah, this is his first screenplay, is it not?
I believe so.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he's obviously written numerous novels. I thought he handled it well. Again, I haven't read the script, so I don't know. I'm sorry, I haven't read the book, so I don't know how much work he had to go into that. It mm-hmm. makes me want to read the book, but. I thought the dialogue was snappy and a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, to get those brothers and sisters bickering and you know, jibing at each other like that and still showing that they care. And I thought that's not always an easy thing to come across. And I thought that he handled that part of it very well.
Yeah, I do too.
They
I
did
mean,
say things like that reminded me. Yeah, those yeah. brothers. Yeah, that's how brothers uh-huh. talk to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, and reigning in the, you know, and again, reigning in the chaos. You know, from Sean Levy's mm-hmm. point of view, bringing it together so there was somewhat tight, and you know, being able to rein everything in and pick and choose, so that there's nothing that's confusing, mm-hmm. and then everything does, as Chloe had said, button up nicely at the end, and so that we buy it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was good. You know, for the people that are watching. Yeah. You know, hopefully they had the same experience we did. Then maybe they liked it more, liked it less, but they should let
who
us know.
Who knows whether or not they're part of the critics who don't like it. I was surprised by the critics, you know, but I'm not too surprised in the sense that it seems like critics hate everything, you know, because every time I look
the
at
critics.
How...
I can, you know, but again, I'm not going to... For me, I'm not going to... Listen, if it was a 15%...
Right.
Movie, mm-hmm. I'd be, okay, you went in with a hatchet you went in hating this
an
movie.
An agenda already, yeah.
A 43%. Yeah. 3%.
Like Monuments Men when they had a 35. I was like,
right.
What are you upset with Monuments?
and this one, I go with a 43%. I'm going 7% away from 50. That's almost the split.
Yeah.
I'm like, they didn't.
Yeah, but
somebody
your
actually
43,
did like them.
But your audience is in the 70s. And I'm going, really?
Yeah.
I mean, because usually there's a 20 difference.
That's been happening a lot this
and now
this
you're
past
getting,
summer.
You know, 30, almost 40.
Yeah.
I'm
it's
going,
been happening a lot.
What's
this
going
summer.
On there? That's a big difference.
Yeah.
So. I was kind of, it's like, what are they so upset about? I didn't, you know, I only read two or three reviews. One of them said that, you know, with this ensemble cast, you would expect more rather than the pedestrian results or something like that. And I went, Well, first of all, I don't know why you're going and expecting anything. You should just let the movie come to you. Well, that's just my own philosophy. But why not just let the movie come to you rather than have an expectation of what it should be? Because then you're not in the movie that you're watching. You're watching the movie you want to see mm-hmm. or hoping to see something right. else. Mm-hmm. So what's the point?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. Again, I read the similar reviews that you did, and, you know, cast can't overcome this or whatever. I am on the flip side.
Yeah,
I think the cast really overcame that. And I think it's a great example of how something that they took something that I thought was mediocre, but they elevated it.
Let me just
ask
you this, just a little bit about that, because did you like the stuff that bothered you most was just that, okay, all the stuff he's throwing in. And
contrivances, some of the coincidences, lesbianism.
Were you okay about the dialogue and the relationships and stuff like that? Did that work for you?
Yeah, but it worked for me because I bought the people
who
were
delivering. You bought the relationship between
I bought the people who were delivering the dialogue. Mm-hmm. I thought that the performances were
great.
Good.
Okay.
I thought they elevated the material.
I can absolutely.
And had it been the other team that had done this, I'm not sure I would have felt the same way. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed watching Jason Bateman and Tina Fey, Corey Stahl. I enjoyed Rose Byrne, Timothy Oliphant, Jane Fonda. They each had their day in the sun. They didn't overplay it and or underplay it, and it didn't become... It was the way that it didn't become too maudlin for me. Mm-hmm. So I was able to rise above it because I laughed.
Right.
As I said at the beginning, I did find the movie had its charm. Mm-hmm. And all those things to me added up to outweigh whatever negative I could have thought about. I was like, when I was done with the movie, I ultimately enjoyed it. I was entertained. Mm-hmm. And so I could... It's misforgivings or
right.
I could forget.
And Marissa, you would recommend this, correct?
I would tell my whole family to go watch this. Mm-hmm. And if you like that fun family dysfunctional dynamic, this is definitely a good movie that you can laugh at, but then still at the end feel like, yeah, that was a real family. I can completely relate to that. And that's why I think, and the great thing about it, it can touch upon so many different age ranges. You could be a younger teenager, but still find this movie funny, and an older adult and find this movie funny. So I think it really speaks to a lot of different people.
And basically saying, just go, but know that there might be some conveniences, some contrivances that may not, but just run with it and have a good time.
I recommended it to a friend of the show's who's actually been here, Cammie.
Oh, nice.
I had lunch with her yesterday, and she goes, you know, I haven't been to the movies in such a long time. Mm-hmm. She goes, I'm thinking of seeing this. She goes, have you seen anything? I said, you know, I saw this movie. This is Where I Leave You. She goes, oh, I was supposed to go to a screening of that. I go, I think you would like that. That seems to be, and I know, and she goes, really? She goes, it looks good. And so I did recommend it, and I wouldn't have necessarily a problem recommending it, you know, unless I knew that male or female is just not into that kind of a movie.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, I would might tell my mother to go see it or my dad.
I think there's plenty in this that people can like. There's a lot of moments in it. There's a lot of fun in it. Mm-hmm. I think you'll recognize family members. You'll laugh at the family members that you think about. And, go and have a good time.
Yeah. And why don't you want to do that when you go to a movie?
Yeah. So there you go.
So.
Okay, last thoughts, anything?
Nope, I already
got it. Marissa.
I enjoy this film, and I definitely recommend it.
Okay, so there we go. By the way, Marissa, tell them where they can find us.
You can follow all of us at anatomyofamovie.com and then also on Movie Talk Nation. And you can follow us on Twitter at Movie Anatomy. And definitely keep rating, keep commenting. We love reading everybody's thoughts about all of our dissections.
And at Movie Talk Nation, we talk movies.
Yes,
we do.
We talk movies. And here at Anatomy of Movies, we dissect them. So thank you very much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
There you go. Live long and prosper.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.